Thanks, Shane. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Wash your hands.
Good afternoon on this Friday afternoon. How are you? 51551 ray at rte.ie. We're heading towards the weekend. Yay! That piece by Freya Clements in the Irish Times this morning cheered me up no end. It's a sort of glimpse into our future. She got her jab yesterday in the SSE arena in Belfast. She's in the 40 to 45 age group. And the last time she said she was in the SSE arena was at a Killers concert. And she described the joy and the freedom exuding from the newly jabbed, vaccinated people as they left the SSE arena. One woman, she said, danced across the car park after getting a shot. And inside, they were blasting this out of the speakers. And had a huge digital screen with the number of people being vaccinated as it went, you know, live. So that's what's ahead of us, which is brilliant. And I was just thinking about it, like, things can only get better. That's brilliant. And what was that lady dancing to? Had she got her headphones on? Had she got her own soundtrack for freedom? You know, when you get vaccinated, there is this sense, and we've spoken to people on the show, it's a sense of freedom and relief and safety, all of those things wrapped up in one. And we started thinking about songs that would suit, you know, songs that would suit after you got the jab, as you left the vaccination centre. I'm free to do what I want any old time. Oh, them'll be the days. Free. I said I'm free to do what I want any old time. Ah, yeah, the Soup Dragons. George Michael, what would you say? Freedom. Ah, yeah, freedom. Freedom. It's coming. Thanks, George. Hands in the air. Nice to be important, but more important to be nice. Ah, yeah. Or this one. This would be my favourite. I think I'm going to bring one of those wireless speakers with me. I'm going to get out of the vaccination centre. I'm going to put it there on the side of the road or in the car park or wherever it is and blast it out. Here we go. No. See, it won't work on the day either. I got my arms, got my hands, got my fingers, got my legs, got my feet, got my toes, got my liver, got my blood, I've got life. I got my freedom, I've got life. The great Nina Simone. I've got life. Got freedom. Any suggestions? Welcome to 51551, and we might get some clips of your vaccination songs and play them out before the end of the programme. This is related because it's been a big week in the UK this week. They've been unlocking lockdown, opening things up, easing restrictions, any other phrase you like. And we got an email in from a person who isn't in the UK but has a friend in the UK, came into ray@rte.ie. After I spoke with some friends across the pond in the UK, I feel like it's a bit of a glimpse into a crystal ball for our summer. Her family have booked an outdoor table for dinner this evening. Can you imagine it? As she told me, I fell into a decadent daydream. Walking into an establishment, maybe a restaurant, confidently announcing your booking and being led to a table that doesn't have to be cleared of homework or whatever child-related debris is usually scattered about the place. A menu, an actual list of food made at the hands of experts, is thrust into your hands as you gleefully gaze at drinks poured into pristine glasses. You scan, you peruse, you make sure you order something different from your dining partner so you can take a nibble of theirs. You throw caution to the wind and over-order on the sides. Chips. Yeah, we'll have some of that cream spinach. Yes, whatever you're doing with the carrots, we'll have that as well. You already have an idea what you want for dessert. And then that magic moment. The waiter comes your way, balancing plates on his arm and carefully sets them in front of you as the aromas waft around the group. You clink, you eat, you laugh. And then in a flash, the table is cleared and the dirty dishes are carried to a magical place where you don't have to do the washing up. There's no loading or unloading. They're just gone magically. Ray, as soon as I hung up the phone from that call, I snapped out of my daydream and went straight on the website of the restaurant that my pal will be frequenting tonight. Being the good friend that I am, I had a look at the menu on her behalf and emailed her my suggestions for what she should order tonight. Talk about living vicarious to others, what? Yeah. We're looking over and we're thinking, that's us. That's us in a while. It's us in a while. This is related. It mightn't seem to be related initially, but this we spotted this. It's a story from Krakow in Poland. And it's one of those headlines that you'd see on Have I Got News For You. Do you know where they give you the first bit and you have to fill in the blank? Mystery animal stuck in a tree turns out to be a blank. So the ISPCA, or the equivalent, the Polish equivalent, the Krakow Animal Welfare Society, got a call from concerned people in a neighbourhood saying it was a bird, it was a reptile, it was a mammal. It was stuck in a lilac tree. What was it? They were afraid to leave their houses. They were afraid to open their windows in case this vermin came in and ate their young. That's not what it says. Anyway, so the Krakow Animal Welfare Society come out to try and identify this unidentified animal. Was it a bird? Was it a reptile? Was it a mammal? They all thought it might have been an iguana. That's what the wise people in the neighbourhood thought. An iguana, definitely iguana. I'm looking at the picture here. It looks to me like some upside down marsupial. A possum, maybe. I don't think there are possums in Poland. Is it possible to find a possum in Poland? Anyway, when they came, they got the ladder and they went up. It wasn't a bird, it wasn't a plane, it wasn't a reptile, it wasn't a mammal, it wasn't an iguana or a possum. It was a croissant. It was a croissant. And we'll put that picture up because it's very convincing. You would be scared. Whatever way the light is on the croissant, it looks like some sort of animal. Which brings us nicely on to this email from Roisin. Can you help, please? Yesterday, a cake came into my head. A cake I had years ago, but I'm craving for at the moment. It's a thick, heavy cake filled with raisins in between two layers of pastry. I've Googled and Googled, but cannot find it. The raisin filling is not like Christmas cake. It's different than that, drier. Maybe your audience will know. Thanks, Roisin. A thick, heavy cake filled with raisins between two layers of pastry. You're bringing me right back to my childhood. I remember it, but I don't know the name of it. There was a bakery in Kildare run by, I think, the Graham sisters, and it was beside the shop that my grandfather used to own. And we used to go in there, and it was an amazing place to go into as a child because you could barely see over the counter, and the array of things in front of you, fairy cakes, cupcakes, chocolate eclairs, apple squares, Battenberg slices, and then this thing, which was my favourite. It was a workmanlike cake. It was a functional brick of a thing. And I just loved it. Maybe it was because you got value. I felt that you were getting value for money. Because unlike that puff pastry, where there's more air than pastry, this thing was solid. You were getting bang for your buck. But can I remember the name of it? No, I can't. So I'm in the same boat as Roisin. So we put it out to you there. We've spoken about this cake before. That's the mad thing, because it comes up regularly. I don't see them around the place anymore. They're nearly like a full meal in one little cake, if my memory serves me correctly. Anyway, help us out, me and Roisin. The cake, thick, heavy cake, a brick of a cake, a meal of a cake, a lovely cake. Noelle's been on. She says, this day last year, you announced the birth of Killian O'Donovan. Would you wish him a happy first birthday today and best wishes to his parents, Katrina and Declan? Yeah, fine. And if you like, you could also include my husband, Jerry. But why not include Jerry? And that's Noelle. So happy birthday, Jerry. And also Killian, who doesn't know much about it because he's only one. And Killian's parents, who are still together after a year, Katrina and Declan. It's great. Yesterday, we spoke to Katrina Costello. And she's the lady who made the Burn documentary. First part last week, second part this Sunday, 6:30. It's a brilliant, beautiful documentary about the Burn, voiced by Brendan Gleeson. Agnes has been on. She says, I love the Burn. Lots of happy memories on holidays there. When I die, I've instructed that my ashes will be scattered around Blackhead in the Burn. Hope not for a long while yet. Watching the programme gave me great comfort, says Agnes. And Bernie's been on. What's that movie again? I mentioned this the other day because Niamh and I are infatuated, I suppose is the word, with this movie. It's only available on Prime Amazon. It's called Palm Springs and it's brilliant. It stars Andy Samberg and Christine Milotti. And it's like a Groundhog Day thing. So Bernie, that's what you're looking for, Palm Springs. We spotted a tweet today from Michael O'Sullivan. Road naming person just ran out of ideas. And there's a picture of a road. He doesn't say where it is. Oh, the Skibbereen Eagle retweeted it. So it may not be in Skibbereen or anywhere close to it. Anyway, the road is called Avenue Road. Road Road, Lane Road, Street Road, Boher Road. It's called Avenue Road. Yeah, I'm sure there are some daft names of roads around the country. Because when you mix up two languages, things get a bit confused sometimes. So if you have any, share them with us on this Friday afternoon, 5151ray@rte.ie. You could use another George Michael song, Let's Go Outside. Yeah, that has implications. My post-vaccine song is I'm So Excited, I Just Can't Hide It by the Pointer Sisters. That's a good choice, Paul. What about Let's Get Physical from Olivia Newton-John? We're all going on a summer holiday, Cliff Richard. Ain't No Stopping Us Now, McFadden and Whitehead. That's a great song, Mick. Happy by Pharrell Williams. I Will Survive by Gloria Gaynor. Congratulations to us all. And I think that's important, Roisin. That's really important, the sentiment in that song for all of us, because we've done so well. And I'm not been patronising or condescending, but we have. And particularly over the last month, when the weather was getting better, we had St. Patrick's Day and we had Easter, and it looks like we listened to the advice and didn't meet up in houses, most of us, all of us, not most of us, not all of us, but most of us. And when we did meet, most of us met up outside, and we know now that the likelihood of getting the virus outside, well, it was 0.1% of people who've got COVID in this country got it outside. Here, they're coming in now, the cake. It's called Gur Cake, and it's short crust pastry made with the leftover cakes in a bakery, says Anne. But can be made from scratch if you like. It's all coming back to me now. We used to call them fruit slices. Possibly known as Gur Cake. Barbara says the raisin cake could be an Eccles cake. They're delicious, says Marilyn. And they're in Donegal. I think the cake you're talking about is a Chester cake, says Joanna. Chester cakes or somebody else. Also called Donkey's Wedding Cake. It might have been called Donkey's Wedding Cake where you were, but in Kildare it would have been called Donkey's Wedding Cake. It's called Tipsy Cake. A lot of suggestions there. Eccles, Tipsy, Gur, Donkey, Chester, fruit slices, all there. But keep them coming in. Gur, Chester Cake, I think, is what we used to call it down in Kildare. That rings a bell with me. 5151ray@rte.ie. I have to tell you about our quiz of today. Today is the 16th of April. And we're looking for two people to come on and answer questions on events that happened on this day over the years. And there is a prize, yes, to encourage you to come on. And it's from the Dylan, 5-star luxury boutique hotel, a magical place where guests can relax in the plush, stylish surrounds of the Ruby Room with its extensive cocktail menu, or dine inside or out in the stylish Edison and Nursery terraces. So the prize, an overnight stay for two people in a luxury double room in the Dylan. And you can find out more at dylan.ie. And to qualify, you have to answer our qualifying question, which is this. In which Irish county would you find the town of Athlone? In which Irish county would you find the town of Athlone? 1850 715 900. 1850 715 900. And we will be talking to you, could be talking to you after 4 o'clock as part of our quiz of today. Good afternoon. Robert Palmer and Johnny and Mary, and that's 41 years old. Although it sounds quite contemporary, doesn't it? It's with that that one by Weekend last year, Blinding Light, brought that sound back. And that sort of different version of that has been used on some ad on the telly. That's what brought it to mind. A really slowed down version of it, acoustic. Anyway, great song. Johnny and Mary, Robert Palmer, 5151ray@rte.ie. And they're saying upstairs we need people for the quiz. 1850 715 900, a great prize to give away. We're looking for two people to come on and answer questions about events that happened on this day over the years. And the qualifying question, in which Irish county would you find the town of Athlone? 1850 715 900. Now, the cake, Chester cake, Donkey's Gudge. Would you like some Donkey's Gudge with your cup of tea, Mrs.? No, thanks, you're okay, I'm fine, actually. My name of the cake is Gur Cake, or Fruit Slices, says Margaret. Garibaldi, says Paul in Kinvara. That's very posh sounding compared to Donkey's Gudge. I'd go for your Garibaldi over your donkey's gudge. The heavy cake is called Gourd cake or Chester cake. My mum had a bakery and it was a firm favourite. It's made from leftover cakes mixed with dried fruit with a pastry base and lid. So it's recycled cake. That's what Eileen says. Is it a Russian slice? Well, I don't know because I'm not an expert. We need to get an expert on this to get a definitive answer, if such a thing exists. We used to call that cake Fly's Graveyard. That's up there with Donkey's Gudge. This didn't realise when we put out, read out Roisin's email that I was going to churn up all this stuff. These cakes were made up of leftovers from fruit cakes and pastry, top and bottom. They were called Chester cakes. So Sean, Gourd cakes or somebody else, it is made from old wedding cakes or leftovers. It got its name from people who were down on hard times or said to be out on Gourd. Brendan Bean tells a great story about this cake. There you go. Years ago, it was called Gourd cake. Tipsy cake had pink icing and very moist filling. It might have been called Russian gatto as well, says Siobhan. So that's Russian thing has come up twice. It could be Chester or Gourd cake, but possibly a railway cake, a rich and dense fruit cake with more pastry than fruit, says Patter. And Siobhan was in Rathfarnham. Okay, so I think it calls for a definitive answer from an expert. We'll try and do that before the end of the programme. But first, we have to take a commercial break.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, 5 on 5, 5 on ray@rte.ie. Good afternoon, Darrow Breen.
Good afternoon. I know where Athlone is. I know what county.
Congratulations, you've got your job.
I have got my job. Now,
before we get to that, because I just heard Jennifer Zamparelli advertising Home Advantage, which is a new family quiz show.
Okay.
And of course, you've been there. You were that soldier, family quiz show soldier.
I was, and it was fondly remembered. In fact, I think it turned up on what show is not reeling, but one of those shows where somebody goes through the archives and there was a genuine astonishment of me standing next to a giant cardboard robot and you fed the paper in and it was a clever reveal and then the colours came out and they won or they lost. Oh, Jesus.
Was it a real robot, Dara?
It wasn't a real robot, no. In fact, the shredder inside, it was very much... just the shredder is the only moving part in the robot. But they came out to Led Zeppelin. Dun-dun-dun, dun-dun-dun, and then the robot would come out. And then you'd either give a family a car or not give them a car. And I discovered, I think as other comics have discovered, there is no funny way to not give a family a car. There is no arch ironic kind of detached way to break the hearts of a family from Athlone. You have to do straight. And then
how many seasons did it run for?
Two whole seasons, my friend.
Right.
Two. And then I emigrated.
But come here. Like, you know, it's on your CV. It's an experience that served you well. You went on to do blockbusters.
Its huge advantage was that I made it with a guy called Seamus Cassidy and then we went on and made the panel.
Ah, there you go.
So that was a huge bonus of it. And I think the two of us went, let's find something we want to do. So it was good fun. And actually the crew we worked on, we were all in our 20s. It was great fun. So it was like a really positive memory. But the memories of making the show are significantly more positive than the show itself. by series two, we were doing them in Spanish. We were pushing the format. In ways that it didn't really merit.
You nearly mentioned Reeling in the Years there. Have you ever featured on Reeling in the Years?
No, I really reached my reign of terror yet. No, it's in the 2010s. I don't think I've ever done anything that quite is substantial enough to merit it.
Right.
I don't think they go. There wasn't an episode where they went, but Echo Island, and then the music plays.
They missed out there. Because
it's a large part of people's cultural history.
No, but it's you know, people love looking at people when they were younger.
I know. And look, don't be aware that even when I was doing this stuff, I was kind of going, do you know if I actually make it in the thing I want to do? This is definitely turning up somewhere. This is the clip they will show on Before He... If it goes well for me, then this is the Before He Was Famous clip of me, you know.
So were all of those things sort of to allow you to do comedy?
No, they were a day job, to be honest, because there aren't that many gigs, particularly in the mid-90s. There were like four gigs, six gigs maybe in the country. So you get to do a bit of stuff. Yeah, you needed a day job. So Echo One was very much the day job. And it's also a case of it takes a bit of nerve to go, well, I'm going to be a comedian. It really took a bit of... So I tried everything. And then after about literally three years, I went into the guy who was running at the time, Kevin Linton, and said, no, I think this is, I think it's time to concentrate on that. I'm getting enough gigs now, which is a natural way it works actually in comedy. You get enough gigs that you can been dumped the office job.
Right. Well, it wasn't really an office job, Darren.
No, but it was the only time I've ever been in an office. It was literally the only time I've had an office job, because there was a building which has since been flattened, like the house in Poltergeist, the building where we made Echo Island and various of the kids' TV.
It's now tarmacked over.
Yeah. And like no memory, there's no blue plaque, there's no kind of Heritage Ireland OPW Interpreter Centre.
In that same building was the building where Mike Murphy was on one side of the corridor with his office, and the late Gay Byrne was on the other side, and that's where that sort of friendly rivalry started.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's back in the day.
Oh, that is before, yeah, because they gave them actually bricked up office by the time we got it.
But of course, the important thing is that you had your show really in your back pocket when you headed over to London, you know.
Oh, look, and Echo Island was at the top of it when I was going in. When I was going in to have a good news for you and these people, I said, what do you need, lad? Someone who's worked with the cockatoo. Someone who's dealt with...
What was the cockatoo's name?
Rocco. Rocco was the name of the cockatoo. Someone who's there when Pete the Vet discovered either a flea or a mite live on camera and said, oh, look, here's a flea. And just out of shot, the mother was furious, livid. They said, oh, yeah, we'll deal with the other dogs. But look, there's a flea. Get the camera in close. And we have to look at the dog's flea while some woman who'd driven up with the dog.
Oh, that's a moment. You see, they missed out on reeling in the ears. Come on.
They did. It could all be that. Okay.
So back to the job then. Yesterday.
I'm exhausted. I'm absolutely spent. But that's just because I'm going out all week.
Go on. Because we read out an email already. Some poor woman living vicariously through her friend who's living in London, who's been out three times this week. So what did you do then on Monday?
Oh,
then?
Stop at the Monday, Tuesday. When, honestly, by the time the jab came, I was happy for the break. Surely the most irritating stance would be to go, look, you're lucky you don't have to. It's exhausting going out again. It wears you down. The only thing is it's cold. It's slightly too early to be doing this. Like it's people putting on the brave face who are freezing. There's a lot of really cold people sitting out at the moment going, well, this is fun like we remember it. No, we never did it. We're just, you know, there's a death wish element here of just going out, just catching just a cold, a normal cold, like because it's so freezing out. So there was that. But it was, look, it's as you remember it. It was very pleasant.
They must have loads of heaters now. They knew this was coming.
Yeah, but they're all booked up for months now.
You
book a heated table is one thing, and then there's people outside who just, you know, chance their arm and they get to sit outside and look at the heaters.
Right.
So there's a lot of that going on. So get used to that.
Or you sort of move over. Sort of, you know.
Yeah, you snuggle up to them in the heater. Whatever. Oh, there's no social distancing now. The heater wins. It's all in the pockets of proximity to the heater. They bring out blankets and stuff.
Right.
Depending on where you are, whatever. But it was more the look, we're doing this and that's a nice thing. But you're not, you'll be out soon. You know.
Not soon enough, people are saying.
No.
You got the jab yesterday and it was an AstraZeneca jab.
It was. I got the AstraZeneca, yeah.
And did you ask or were you told or what way?
This is what we're doing here and that's what you get. I mean, I think it'd be madness if they started telling people.
When you arrived, okay, you were going to take whatever you got, fair enough.
Yes, yeah.
But did they inform you this is the AstraZeneca?
Yes, they did.
Oh, they did, right, okay.
Yeah. And they go in and they tell you this is what it is. There's no quiver in the voice like, hey, look, all we've got is the AstraZeneca. You know, it's not like, look, I know you arrived here, but that's what we've got. There's no element of that, because I think that while there are people of concerns, in my age group, I don't think it's any concern at all. I think if anything, the AstraZeneca reduces my chances of getting a blood clot. That's the kind of the catch of it at this age. It's significant. It's only when you get younger, I think you can compare relative risks and decide you should be cautious about this. But for me, no, whatever you've got, look. And we've loads of it though, so I've sent a couple over, okay? Just with a couple, and don't tell your mother, I've sent a couple over, just, that's for you now.
Can I self-administer?
Actually, it's only a jab in the arm, for God's sake. Ask yourself a few cautionary questions, they do that. And then it only takes a second, you'd hardly feel it. And I said to the woman, will you take a photograph? And Jesus, she shot a reel of them, of me with one arm out, I got to do the gun pose.
And did you have to think about what you were going to wear before you went, Dara?
Do you know, I put a little T-shirt on underneath.
Yes.
And so they could slip the arm out. Right. The glove could be out and I could have the arm revealed. Because it is, the other way is you're taking the whole shirt off.
Like. Yes.
And then I posted a picture of what is a relatively hairy arm I had. I got a thing from Brian O'Driscoll going, "Oh, you're a fan of the Sweat Catcher, are you?" Which frankly
is the T-shirt, is it?
The smaller, slightly tighter T-shirt underneath.
Right, it's a Sweat Catcher. I'd never heard that expression before.
They are now.
Now, here, seeing as you are, and we've said it before, and you are a science communicator, and I suppose communicating science is all important.
Yes, it is.
In these times we live in. And do you think they're doing a good job? Because you said it already there about risk and benefit and, you know, the stats around that. And
well, look, what I ever notice is people who wouldn't be the sort of people who complain about this stuff or worried about this stuff all the time complaining. I think there's always going to be the same group of people who just hear the word vaccine and they react to it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It is a useful thing if somebody comes at you and says, "Oh, but the vaccine," for you to go, "Well, there are literally seven separate vaccines at the moment, five of them in the West, currently. Function. I think we're three or four that are in circulation." So when you say the vaccine, they're not the same. They all have a different mechanism. So I'd frankly like you to make six more YouTube videos about why each separate one doesn't work, rather than just going the vaccine.
Yeah.
Because I think that people are bundling them in together. That's the first sign you're dealing with somebody who doesn't. If they just say the vaccine, because they all have a different mechanism, they're done by different things. We've done a few events with people like the Crick Institute here, where they've talked us through. Look, this is what they're all the protein spikes and the whole thing, but. Unfortunately, I think there's a very loud vocal minority, but the figures are here is 95%, 93% of take-up.
So there's no vaccine, and there's no huge vaccine hesitation in the UK, right?
No, there isn't. It's been enormously uniform, very positive about the whole thing. I mean, there's some kind of, their greater problem is kind of, there may be a cultural issue with what are known as BAME communities, the term is changing, who have a greater level of skepticism about it. And so there's a bigger outreach for that.
But that's interesting because those people, those groups would question authority in general. That happens. We had an amazing lady on, I can't remember her name. She's written a book called Stuck, which is worth a read, about vaccine hesitation. She actually wrote it before all this happened, but it was only published about 6 months ago. But that's the thing, that it's sometimes, well, most often, it's not as simple as questioning the medicine. It's questioning the whole system around the medicine.
Yeah, absolutely. I can see that. The only bit that makes this more of an issue is that they are also the communities most at risk from the actual disease itself.
Yes,
and
yeah.
That is why it is critical. Like, I mean, when it was definitely that it was a case that it has affected particular communities or whatever. I couldn't get the exact, but they would certainly. It is a thing that had to be addressed because it doubles the imbalance.
Yeah.
That they're most likely to actually get a negative effect from it, as well as be skeptical of taking the thing itself. But there are claims complaints about, but it is reassuring the way that it is, and it does seem to be working from what we can gather.
Yeah.
In terms of the numbers of people past a certain age and the take up, and the fact that it lessens the seriousness of conditions when people actually arrive at hospital, if they even do that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. No, it's all good. It's all positive.
It's all pretty good.
And is that positivity palpable in London?
Yeah, hugely. Yeah, there's a real sense of having gone through two or three lockdowns, there's a sense of this might be it. You know, people's greater fear is that there'll be a different variant.
Yeah.
And then it'll be something, either an Indian variant or a Brazilian variant or whatever will come through, because there are spikes appearing in France and Germany as well at the moment. But in London particularly, there is a sense of they've actually, and I would be the first to criticism, done this pretty well and got the vaccine. I mean, like, they've been as hypocritical about vaccine nationalism as anyone has, you know, and they've been very quick to complain about the EU, even though they've literally not let any vaccines out of the country here. But there is a sense on the street, which is where we are these days, that a sense of like, this could be it. This could be us out of this.
Which is great.
And even though there may be a return of it, there may be an element of having to get a booster of this again later in the year, or it may never fully go, and it'll just end up being passing through our systems year after year after year in slightly different forms. This most severe phase of it, the feeling is, and there other people will speak with more information, is that this is a step stepping out of it now.
And talking to your science buddies, is it called the Crick Institute?
Crick and Stew was the thing we did the last event with, yeah.
Okay. What about the future? Do they reckon that this is going to change how we live in a substantial way?
No. I think this is, it'll be a bit like the flu vaccine is now, that there will be variants and they'll keep track of variants the way they keep track of flu variants, and that there may be a need for more at-risk communities to have a jab in the way that they have a flu vaccine now anyway.
Right, yeah.
So that's it. Because the Spanish flu, for example, just carried on, but found a kind of the format it varied into became one that we just became able to live with.
Okay.
And so that happens with a lot of these things, that they will return, but it won't be lockdown seriousness, the kind of the thing that we've had for the last while. We'll okay. just, you know, we will top up intermittently as different variants
move
come
on.
And then they'll just do like they do with the flu, where they'll have an international network of, well, which is this year's dominant variant.
Right. Have you stopped the homeschooling? Are the children back to school?
All gone. They're all back at school.
Brilliant.
And
how does that feel?
I don't even check how they're doing anymore. don't even check how they're getting on. I feel they've got a solid dose of schooling, and frankly, that should keep them for a while.
Right,
it has been the greatest, honestly, because you know you can't do anything.
You can't.
It's really noticeable the schism in comedy is a good example of this. Like whatever between, I remember saying this to Deirdre O'Kane, going, "Geez, I'm looking at these young lads doing videos and TikToks and all the stuff they're doing,
sketches,
they're piling
that,
loads of stuff out." Yeah, and it's great, and like you've got this new generation of Irish young comics. I was talking about them on Twitter today, who are doing all this stuff, like brilliantly edited packages. And she said, "They've no kids. They're not doing any of schooling. They're like all the time in the world to be doing this.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell are we supposed to be doing? Like, learning how to TikTok at 8 o'clock at night? Won't be doing that." And so it was like an iceberg broke, and the young ones went off and created an amazing stuff. And the older ones went, sure, this is what retirement is like. I'll get a hobby.
We'll be
now.
Fine.
And
your hobby is, because we spoke about it the last time, you'd just got delivery of a brand new telescope.
And I've probably got two more since then. You know what? I've gone mad with it. It's as much the deliveries. It's much the ding-dong and there's somebody there in the middle of the lockdown. If you took the deliveries away, I don't think I'd be
It's addictive. It's addictive. It is addictive, you know.
It's very Moorish, all right. Just having the, look, and we run to the door. Who's this one for?
So just like a €5 cable or something like that, you know, just to get the guide.
Oh, stop it. Listen, it was a thing we had on the, it was on Mock the Week. It was one of my life's moments of Mock the Week in the last series about how it was something about, like, I arrived, like, it was like a Southern dame at the door, and, oh, who has come to my door delivering a parcel? And it was like, because they would deliver the parcel, and then they would step back, and then you would check the parcel. Oh, let me check the parcel, Mr. Amazon. And then, but the line I think they didn't include was me going, oh, there's a USB to USB-C cable. How did you know that is what I wanted?
Essential in the times we live in.
Oh, stop it all. Thank you for bringing this adapter to me. Anything you can rip the packaging off.
Yeah. So you mentioned Mock the Week there. It's coming back in May, I believe.
It comes back in May, yeah. We had an interesting moment again, like not as if Twitter is a mark of anything, but somebody posted a kind of angry tweet because they're showing repeats of last November's, which is common enough they show it, right?
Yeah.
But since last November to here, it's astonishing how much stuff has aged. It is that old rule of like the most contemporary thing is the quickest thing that ages. And we were speaking about a world that just doesn't exist anymore. Even the phases of lockdown are so totally different that if you tuned into one of the old shows, we'd be talking about tier 3 versus tier 4.
Yeah.
Language we don't even use about this stuff anymore. There will be a reeling in the ears about 2020 that you will stare at and go, what? They'll have to do like a series of them, one for each lockdown, one for the middle bit of lockdown, where the public messaging suddenly changed and it was a totally different thing, and it was all suddenly hands, face, space, then it was be alert, then it was something else. So we were talking about the vaccines in a kind of we're taking the mickey out of the vaccines, and now the vaccines are the the miracle, and we apparently look really crass.
But isn't it brilliant? Because when it hit last March, people were saying 18 months. It's going to take 18 months. All the best minds in the world are saying it's going to take a year and a half to develop a vaccine. And we haven't even gone through that 18 months, and we have it here, and it's working. You know, so that, like, well done to everybody involved.
There was a lot of very kind of measured talk about it, that there will be a second wave. It will take a while for this to go out, but it will do, the lockdown will do, and that will reduce the number of cases. All these things which have absolutely come to pass.
Yeah.
And yet there'll still be people who go, I had a guy cutting me going, oh, we've done the lockdown, and yet we still have it. And we still have to do another lockdown. And you're going, mate, that's like saying, I did some exercise. And apparently I have to do more exercise. Apparently that's not enough. The one time I did that exercise. Yeah. The situation was constantly changing. But a lot of what people said was, a lot of the more measured kind of predictions, yeah, said, look, this will take some time to get through.
Are you getting a new knee?
We'll be patient.
I was looking at your Twitter there.
Am I getting a new knee? I'm getting something done, but I have to, I've gone all creaky with the thing that's I've had for years. I've always had a shoddy knee.
Had you?
Like I've been strapped for years. And then it broke badly in a comedian's football match in Kilkenny in 2005, and a bit came out of my knee, and I had to push the bit back into my knee and played on like an idiot.
Yes.
And I had to get it opened up and taken out, and the guy said, well, never run on that again for a start. And then at some stage you might have to get it all replaced. So at some stage I might have to, but it's gone. I was basically, the vainglorious part of this is I was on an inflatable assault course on a lake during the summer, and I was jumping off something, following a 9-year-old. I was jumping off something and the leg went under me. And I had to go to the doctor, who said, I'm sorry, what? And I said, well, I was on an inflatable assault course. And the look of this guy, you've had a 30-year knee problem and you were climbing an inflatable assault course and jumping off it. At some point.
The question is then to the doctor or the surgeon, will I be able to climb an inflatable assault course after the surgery?
Well, we already had a thing where I had to pay money to a guy for him to say, no more dancing. No more. I was in Odessa, got with Odessa until 3 in the morning, dancing with Mairead, actually. We went out after a gig.
Mairead Ronan.
And without dancing, Mairead Ronan. And then I ended up in the doctor and him going, no, your dancing is done now.
Your dancing days are over.
My heart, actually. That's done now. He said, look, you're fine. You're married. You've had the dance at the wedding. That's it. That's the last time you need to dance.
Now, I know you're a South County Dublin man, but so you may not know about this particular cake. There's a bit of controversy over a cake today, cake controversy. It's a thickly sort of squashed up cake with dried fruit and pastry on either side. It's like a small brick. And weighs the same. A very dense cake. Have you any memory of that?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Like what? Like a wedding cake or a Christmas
cake?
No.
It'd be sort of like a bun, you know, it'd be a single serving type thing, not as opposed to a cake.
Oh, okay.
But it comes as a square. Any memory, no.
And how did it become controversial, this cake?
No, because Roisin, she got a flash of it. I don't know what she was doing at the time, but she got a flash of this cake from her childhood, and then she googled it and couldn't find a name for it. Now we've had numerous suggestions: Gourd cake, Chester cake, fruit slice, donkey gudge.
I heard donkey gudge.
So they're all there. You've no memory of anything like that.
No. I was never a fruitcake person.
Why not?
What was your bun of choice? Thing is, there was, do you remember that caramel thing that is like a flan or whatever? What is it gone? It's like that.
Banoffee.
Oh, that thing that you'd make upside down and you'd. It was a caramel taste. It was like a wobbly thing. Oh, I'm not describing this well at
no,
all.
No, you're not. For a man who's good with words. Knock him off science and current affairs and he can't. Yeah.
was that thing?
Look, they'll come up with it. It's an upside down caramel something. Right. Love, Dara. Thanks for making me laugh. Go on.
It's okay. I'm just going to flail more trying to remember the movie cake. No, I don't. I don't know this cake. I'm afraid I can't.
And Margaret's been on as well. Really enjoyed this interview with Dara, making me smile. And we all need a smile. So, Mock the Week's coming back in May and then gigs whenever they can.
Back in May. We're going to start with car gigs here, and then we'll start. Then we'll go into socially distanced gigs and hope it'll evolve into normal shows. And then again, we have some mad plan of going back and being back in Vicar Street with a new show in November. Who knows?
Right.
Dates have come and gone. We've had imaginary fictional tours that have been booked in and disappeared for the last year and a half.
How would you feel, Darrow O'Brien? How would you feel, Darrow O'Brien, if the man at the door in Vicar Street was stopping people for a vaccination passport? There you go.
See, yeah, I know, it's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
I feel my crowd would have all gone and got the vaccination anyway. I don't get a massive anti-vaxxer crowd, to be honest. Kind of. So I think of all the events, I think I'd very much get the pro-science people going, yeah, of course.
No worries on that front then. Dara, great talking to you. Thanks for making us laugh. Somebody's saying,
and good luck to everybody there.
A cream caramel or a creme brulee?
Creme caramel.
There you go. Well done. See, they're very good. They're very good on their cakes. Thanks, Dara. See you. Talk to you soon. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, Reeling in the Years is back, as you know. Sunday, it's the turn of 2011. And on the line, we have Henry Healy, cousin of Barack Obama. How are you doing, Henry?
Hey, Ray, how are things?
Good to talk to you now. Just to bring us all right back to the 23rd of May, 2011. Charlie Bird, come in, Charlie.
The heavy squalls of rain didn't deter the 3,000 or so people who had lined the streets of the village since 11 o'clock this morning. And remarkably, as the president's motorcade drove into the village, the sun broke through the dark clouds. The president and the first lady were greeted on their arrival by Mr. Obama's distant cousin, Henry Healy, and the mayor of North Tipperary, John Kennedy, and the Cathaoirleach of Offaly County Council, Danny Owens. Then the remarkable walkabout began. Hands clasped, babies kissed, autographs given. The president and Michelle Obama seemed to have a moment for almost everybody.
What a very special day, Henry.
Yeah, unbelievable. It's hard to believe it's 10 years ago.
Yeah. Do you get goosebumps when you hear that back?
Yeah, you do. It's like reliving a dream, you know. It was a phenomenal experience for the whole community, and obviously for our family as well. And you do see it on various programs the odd time, and people speaking about it and stuff. And it was a good news story. Everyone was speaking about 2010 being that depressing year, and Moneygall was able to be in a little bubble of its own in 2011 with some positivity and a positive outlook, with this hope, change, and an inspirational guy coming to visit, you know.
And when did the whole story start of you being related? How many years previous to that?
2007, when then Senator Obama declared he was running for the office of president. A genealogist by the name of Megan Smoleniak, she began researching his roots and traced everything to a headstone in Ohio that said Kearney, Moneygall, Kings County, and the search reverted back to Ireland and Canon Stephen Neal and the baptismal records here locally as well.
Wow. And then you were the eighth cousin of... And I was just watching that today. That was Charlie Bird's. But when he arrived in the village, and people who know the village of Moneygall, it's just a street, really, isn't it? And at the top of the street then was the old homestead.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, that was probably one of the areas where the general public lost out, because there were no cameras in the homestead. But it was probably the most emotional that President Obama got on the visit, was because... He walked in those doors, and he was greeted by John Donovan, who owned the house, and he was told the story and the history of it. And I can still hear to this day the echo in the room of him pounding his foot on the timber floor. And what I remarked was, what he said was, this is where my grandfather's grandfather left from. And it still strikes me to this day, because everyone say it's so distant, and it is distant, of course it is, but he was able to bring it that close. You know, he knew his grandfather, and his grandfather obviously knew his own grandfather. So, you know, he was really bringing it close, and I felt close to home. And everything he took in, he gave back verbatim to the First Lady as she came. She followed in a few minutes after into the ancestral home. He really took it in. And you know, in 2015, when we visited the White House, there was a pencil drawn presented to him as well. Of Fulmuth Kearney, his third great grandfather, and that still hangs on his office today, right. in Washington, in the presidential office of Obama. Yeah.
And that day, so the helicopter landed out in the GAA pitch, and then the motorcade came in. It stopped at the top of the street opposite the homestead. He was introduced to you, and that John Kennedy, the local politician, and you walked into the house with him.
Yeah.
Wow.
But the one of the first things he did was, though, as you recall, because you were here as well that day, Ray. He shot across the street and he began engaging with the general public. And to be fair, the stories you hear now from people who followed him up along the street and different things, and he, you know, shook his hand more than once. People, you know, really got a lot of personal time with him. Like, it was, you compare it to the Queen's visit, which was 3 days. President Obama's here for 12 hours. And, you know, of those 12 hours, 45 minutes were supposed to be Moneygall. He stayed an hour and a half. You know, it was really, it was a flash in the pan when you think of 2011, but it's a most memorable big occasion moment. For us
and,
all.
He went from Moneygall back up to College Green and he made this speech. Well, this is just part of the speech. Here we go.
Hello, Dublin!
Yay!
Hello, Ireland! My name is Barack Obama of the Moneygall Obamas. Hey. And I've come home to find the apostrophe that we lost somewhere along the way.
There you go. What was the first thing he said to Henry?
He greeted me and said, "I believe we're related." And he began asking me what I was working at the time. And then we were interrupted pretty much immediately as by the First Lady. He introduced me to the First Lady, and I can still see her. She glanced her hand up and down, gesturing towards the two of us. I can see the resemblance, you know, she was saying in jest. Then they went on, as I said, they crossed the street and began engaging with the people.
And he grabbed a baby out of the crowd, didn't he? Go on, sorry.
He grabbed three babies out of the crowd. So there's been three different babies, and one of those babies was baptized, was christened a couple of weeks afterwards, and their middle name is Barack as well. So strange things happen.
Yeah, and we've spoken to you a good few times since, and you were back and forth to the White House, and are you still in contact with Barack Obama?
Yeah. As I was saying, sort of to your Niamh, your researcher earlier, I said. I can contact him, but as it is, very close relatives and people around me, I struggle to make conversation now because there's nothing to speak about. So I don't contact him just for the sake of it, you know. But I have ways of contacting him or members of his team as well, you know. But I'm sure he's pretty preoccupied with his podcasts and getting the second volume of his book out.
And will you be sitting down to watch Reeling in the Ears on Sunday at 6:30? Sorry, 8:30, isn't it? 8:30.
Yeah,
sorry,
6:30. Definitely. You know, it's going to be great to look back. And I always say, because of the build up to President Obama's visit at that time, we missed out on the Queen's visit. So it'll be great to relive that as well. So
I've been trying to guess what song they're going to play alongside. You know, try to predict it. So see what you think. Okay. So I went through all the hits of 2011. Right. So they'll show all those, look, that great footage, the baby kissing and all that. He goes into Ollie Hayes' pub, comes back out, motorcade back out to, the helicopter takes off Dublin. And then the night is closing in. The night is closing in and he has spent his 12 hours in Dublin. OK, here we go.
The sun goes down, the stars come out, and all that counts is here and now. My universe will never be the same. I'm glad you came.
It's Fader Lane. Yes, we can. Yes, we can. It's Fader Lane.
What do you think, Henry? It's gone.
Definitely. I know my universe hasn't been the same. I was very glad he came.
It's
great for me as well.
Henry, great to talk to you. Great to talk to you. We'll talk to you again soon. Mind yourself.
Thanks, Ray.
Enjoy it. See you. Bye. Bye. Bye.
Cheers.
You look well on me, well on me. So let's go somewhere no one else can see you and me. Turn the lights out now.
Yeah, glad you came, Mr. Obama. Now, we'll stop that and we'll go to a quick commercial break. Here we go.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
We found a man who has the full story on Roisin's cake. We'll be talking to him after 4 o'clock, and we'll do the quiz, of course. But an ishtosh now in the free skeleton, a note to the Kieran O'Farta. Kieran, good morning. Thanks very much. 5 on 5 5 on radio.rt.ie. Running away from school or home was called going on gur. Presumably, this is the cheapest form of cake you could afford when you were doing that, says Tony. Well, it definitely keep you fortified for at least a day. Donkey's Gudge in Cork by Gur cake, Chester cake and Russian slice are all one and the same. Although I remember the Russian one having pink icing. It was spiced, moist and a heavy cake cut into a square with a short crust base. Leftover cake soaked in tea and spices and then icing on top. A brick of a cake, as you say, but absolutely savage, says Laura. And the tipsy cake was a cake that was made from the waste of all other cakes being made in the bakery. Well, that's the recurring theme. It was to prevent waste. These were all mixed together with a beer, hence the name Tipsy Cake. Aha. The number of cakes made would depend upon the amount of waste materials available, says Colin. Maybe the Tipsy Cake was made with beer and then the Chester Cake or Gur Cake was made with tea. Maybe that's the difference. And my father was a baker in Ennistown in County Clare. Aha, we have an expert here. I will always remember my dad making these cakes when we were kids, made from leftovers from the bakery, says Abina or Abina. But what's the name? Abina. Let us know, 5 on 5 5 1, as we go to our quiz of today. 16th of April, and we've cobbled together 10 questions on events that happened on this day over the years. The prize is overnight stay for two people in a luxury double room in the Dillon, which is a 5-star luxury boutique hotel in Dublin. And you can find out more about that, dillon.ie. Alva Friel in Galway City. How are you doing, Alva?
Hey, Ryan, how are you?
Good. Did you call me Ryan? I'll have to hang up on you, I'm sorry. I'm joking.
No. Hey, Ryan.
You're the second Alva we've had on this week.
Really?
Yes, and it's not a common name, is it?
No, not a common name, no.
We had an Alva Lee from Sligo on the other day. A-I-L-B-H-E. Oh,
there's a few of us out there, so...
Yes. Right. And what do you know about your name?
All I know is it's an old Irish name. My mom likes and my dad, so yeah. They went with it, yeah.
It's a nice name.
So, I have two little girls as well with Irish names.
Go on, what are they?
I have Etane and I have Saoirse.
How do you spell Etane?
E-father-T-A-O-I-father-N. It's an old Celtic name for 18.
Right, and it's pronounced Etane, Etane.
Yes, it's like Etienne in French.
Right, and yeah. Saoirse. What ages are
and
they?
Saoirse. Etienne is 9 and Saoirse is 7, so they're happy to be back to school, Ray.
And are you happy that they're back at school?
Very happy, yes. I'm back to work as well. So.
Oh, are you? Where do you work?
Yeah, I work in the hospital in Galway.
Right.
In cardiology, so it's a busy department. We're kept going.
Right, and did you find people were staying away during the lockdown?
They were doing as they were asked, but they're slowly coming back in now, so it's great getting people back to normal now, yeah.
Any plans for the weekend? Alva?
We're hoping to go to Clifton over the weekend and maybe climb Diamond Hill.
Nice.
So we'll see what the weather is like. Haven't been out there in a while.
Where Diamond Hill? Where is it in relation to Clifton?
It's out Clifton Way. I think it's, I don't know if it's the Westport side.
Yeah.
But we're going to have a look and see if we'll be able to do it. We'll take the dog as well, Rocky.
Rocky, well, there's a lovely, I don't know if you've done it, but there's a lovely, I don't know if it's a national park, or but there's lovely walkways out there and you go out and it's where electricity or something was launched from here to America.
Yes. And that's out near Ballinahinch,
is it? And Alcock and Brown may have landed there. I'm just making this up, but it's
you're correct.
Yeah, it's a lovely walkway, and there's some great scenery there. And I think the kids would love it, and it wouldn't
we'll try and take it in as well. Do as much as we can.
It wouldn't be too difficult, you see, because Diamond Hill sounds like it might be a bit of a trek for the young ones. Yeah.
Well, you get them into what will be Kilpatrick eventually.
Yes, you'll build up to it. Okay.
Exactly,
right.
Yeah.
You're up against Maura Hammersley in Tipperary.
Hi, Maura.
Hi, Maura.
Hi, Ray. Hi, Eva.
Alva.
How's it going?
Alva, sorry.
You're all right, don't worry.
It's okay. You can call me whatever. Call me Brian, Ryan, Ray, Gay, anything you want. Okay. Now, whereabouts in Tipperary are you, Maura?
I'm in Tipperary Town at the moment.
Right.
But I live outside it. I live outside Tipperary Town.
And what are you in the town for?
Doing the grocery shopping.
Right. How's that going for you?
Well, I haven't started it yet.
Oh, have you not? Right, okay. Is it the big shop, Maura?
The big shop of the week, yeah.
Yeah, there'll be lots of nappies in it, I believe.
Oh, yeah, there'll be plenty of nappies, yeah. Definitely.
Congratulations on the birth of Danielle.
Thank you very much.
How old is Danielle?
She's 2 months now.
How's she getting on?
Grand, yeah, great. Sleeping through the night, so no complaints.
And she's a little sister for Isabel and Charlotte.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Yeah.
So 4 years, 2 years and 2 months.
Exactly, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Keep me on my toes.
Yes, yeah, yeah. I'm just projecting forward to something like 12 years' time. You'll have a 16-year-old, a 14-year-old, and what, a 12-year-old.
Yeah.
That's going to be great crack.
Be great fun, yeah. Yeah.
So what's the story at home? You're married to?
JP.
JP, right. And what does JP do?
He works as a scientist in Boston Scientific.
Does he?
Oh. And he's also a part-time farmer.
Right. Okay. That's a nice combination.
Yeah.
Maybe that explains then the two girls, because when anything happens in the house, they blame.
Oh, they blame the coronavirus.
Do they? Right. So if something falls off a shelf, coronavirus.
Well, yeah, if it's a noise, if they hear a noise and Charlotte might say, "What's that noise?" And Isabel goes, "It's the coronavirus."
Right.
They just hear that word being bandied about, but they don't really understand the concept of it.
Well, it's good that they don't understand it really, isn't it?
I haven't bothered to explain.
Right. Five questions each. We have a night in the Dillon up for grabs. Whoever answers most correctly gets the prize. If we have a draw at the end of five questions, we go to a tie break. Good luck, Alva in Galway. Good luck, Maura in Tipperary. Here we go. Right, Alva, first question for you. On this day in 1951, the 55th Boston Marathon was won by Shigeki Tanaka of Japan. What are the two colours on the flag of Japan? Red and white or red and yellow?
Red and white.
Correct answer. Maura, on this day in 1956, the 60th Boston Marathon was won by Antti Viskari of Finland. What are the two colours on the flag of Finland? Blue and red or blue and white?
Blue and white.
Correct answer. Right, they're easy ones to get you going, get you settled in. Alva, your second question is an audio one. Have a listen to this. Love that music. On this day, 1924, Henry Mancini, American composer and conductor, was born in Cleveland, Ohio. He composed that famous theme tune to the film and TV versions of that show. Can you name it?
The Pink Panther?
Yes. And we used to go around as kids going, dead ant, dead ant, dead ant. That doesn't matter. Right, okay, for you, Maura, have a listen to this. On this day in 1948, Jan Hammer, Czech-American composer, was born in Prague. He composed the theme tune to that police drama starring Don Johnson as Sonny Crockett. Can you name it?
Hang on. Let me think. Oh, that Miami thing.
You're there. Come on.
Oh, jeepers. Oh, my God. I have baby brain. Miami Vice.
Well done. Right, two all. Alva, third question for you. On this day in 1934, the first laundromat in the US opened in Fort Worth, Texas. What we want to know is, in total, how many US states begin with the letter T? Is it two or three?
Two.
Yes, Texas and Tennessee. Well done. Similar question for you, Maura. On this day in 1861, during the US Civil War, Virginia seceded from the Union. In total, how many US states begin with the letter V? Two or three?
Two.
Is the correct answer, Virginia and Vermont. Okay, you two are good. Alva, fourth question is an audio one. Have a listen to this. That song was number one on this day in 1990. Can you name the singer?
Madonna.
Correct answer, with Vogue. And for you, Maura, have a listen to this. That song, Back for Good, number one on this day in 1995. It's hard to believe, 26 years ago. Can you name the group?
Take That.
Yes, were you a fan?
Big fan.
Yeah. Okay, so that was easy enough for you. That's the way they fall. Four all. Right, Alva, get this right and you put Maura under a bit of pressure to get her final question correct, and if she does, we're into a tie-break situation. Okay, good luck. On this day in 2003, the Treaty of Accession, admitting 10 new member states into the European Union, was signed in Athens, Greece. Which of these countries has a larger population than Greece? Okay, which of these countries has a larger population than Greece? Romania, Austria or Bulgaria?
I'd say Austria.
Now, Austria has a population of 9 million. Greece has a population of 10 million.
Okay.
Romania was the one we were looking for, 19 million. Okay. But you're not out of it yet, Alva. You're on 4. Maura has a question in hand. If she gets it right, she's the winner. If she gets it wrong, we're into a tie-break situation. Good luck with this, Maura. On this day in 1960, Rafael Benitez, football manager, was born in Madrid, Spain. Which of these countries has a bigger population than Spain? Iraq, South Africa, or Canada?
Canada.
Canada has a population of 37 million. Spain has a population of 46 million. The correct answer is South Africa, 59 million. So, it's 4-4. We're into a tie-break situation. You were asked the tiebreaker before you came on. So I'll ask the question now. If you could remember your guess, it'd be great. It's the person who's closest to the correct answer. On this day in 1871, John Millington Synge, poet and playwright, was born in Dublin. And 150 years ago today. According to Google Maps, how long would it take to cycle from the GPO in Dublin to New Ross in County Wexford? We want your answer in hours and minutes. So, we go to you first, Alva.
4 hours 10.
4 hours 10, you say? It's 138 kilometres. And your guess, Maura, was?
6 hours 30 minutes.
6 hours 30 minutes. Right. I can tell you the correct answer is 7 hours and 18 minutes. So, Maura, you're closest. Commiserations, Alva.
Thank you, Rob.
I don't like it going down to the tiebreaker, but that's the only way you can sort it out. So, we're going to send you out a Ray D'Arcy Show mug.
And, lovely, thank you.
And enjoy the trek around Clifton on Sunday. I hope it stays fine for you. And I mean that. As sometimes that can sound
thanks
a little
a million, bit. Ray. Yeah. Well done, Maura.
Thanks very much.
See you, Alva. Mind yourself.
Thank
see you.
You.
Stay
bye.
Safe. Bye, 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 bye. Maura, well done.
That's great. Thanks for meeting, Ray.
What we didn't say was that JP, your husband, is celebrating a big birthday in May.
Yeah, he was the big 4-0.
Right. So now you don't have to bother buying him anything. Just bring him
exactly,
up to the Dillon.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
Sorted.
That's sorted now.
Sorted, right. Enjoy it. Pass on our best wishes to JP. And congratulations again on the birth of Danielle. See you, Maura.
Great. Thanks
bye
very
now.
Much,
bye,
Ray.
Bye,
okay,
bye,
thank
bye,
you.
Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now we'll get to the bottom of Roisin's cake very shortly, very shortly. But we were just talking about Freya Clement's article in the Times at the beginning of the show and the fact that when she got her vax up in Belfast yesterday, they were pumping out "Things Can Only Get Better." And it got us thinking about songs that you would play when eventually you get your vaccination. And songs that encapsulate the mood and the feeling. And thanks for all the suggestions. Paul is going to have this one on his MP3 player or whatever he's going to play the music on. This is it.
I'm so excited and I just can't hide it. I'm about to lose control and I think I like it. I'm so excited.
Thanks for that, Paul. And Dave and Claire suggest this one. Great suggestion, Dave. Michael is in Dublin 12. His suggestion? Cream from 1967. And another listener who remained anonymous, well, they didn't give us their name, says this one. You have to hear it, and it's sort of... Anyway, I'll explain after.
A nation once again. A nation once again.
And they suggest... Vaccination. Vaccination once again, you see. Vaccination once again. And then when we're through it all, we can all give ourselves a pat on the back.
Congratulations.
And congratulate ourselves. Yes.
And jubilations. I want the world to know I'm happy as can be.
So is it Gore? Is it Chester? Is it Donkey Gudge? We'll find out after this. Dermot Kennedy, Giants. RT Radio 1. That's the station you're tuned into. Now, Roisin got us going today. A cake came into her head yesterday. A thick, heavy cake filled with raisins between two layers of pastry. She Googled and Googled it. Could find out nothing. She was looking for our help. I wasn't any help to her at all, but loads of suggestions. Chester, Garibaldi, Eccles, Fruit Slice, Russian Slice, Gurr, Donkey Gudge, Flies something else. And there's another one there, Fly Cemetery. So we decided we go to an expert. So on the line we have Dr. Martin McInumara, Chair of the Masters in Gastronomy and Food Studies in TU Dublin. How are you doing, Martin?
I'm not bad at all, right?
this was great crack, I have to say. It was great fun. Now, we've spoken before, and there are different names for the same thing around the country. That's a norm, isn't it?
It is, and actually, as you were earlier on, you're talking about the music behind the Pink Panther and saying "Dead Ant, Dead Ant, Dead Ant." That sounds a bit like that Fly Cemetery thing, you know, or the Garibaldi cake, you know. It is, as I say, Gurr cake is what she's talking about,
is it, right?
Roisin. So it is Gurr cake.
And so describe a Gurr cake to me, then.
Huh?
Describe the Gurr cake to me, how it's made.
Yeah, so the Gurr cake basically is sort of a thick, it's between two slices of pastry. So it's sort of like a tray bake as such, in that, you know, that it would be baked in a tray and then cut into squares.
Right.
All right? So what you'd get is you'd get a layer of pastry down the bottom, and then in the middle would be basically leftover sponge and bits and pieces, you know, all sort. Basically, it was the ultimate. We talk about sustainability in food and all that sort of stuff. This was the ultimate sustainability, because basically, bakers, you know, when they're making different cakes, you know, they cut things down to size, and the bits of the sponge that's just left over would have been put into a barrel sort of thing and soaked.
Nice.
And also, certain stuff that would come back, certain cakes that would come back from the shops and stuff like that could also go in and could be recycled this way.
Uh-huh.
Now, you wouldn't put fermented stuff in there, you know what I mean,
yes.
Or yeast bread, but other stuff could go in there, you know. It'd be mixed in with sort of spices and with sort of, you know, with various syrups and sugars and that sort of stuff, and then layered on top of the pastry with the pastry on top, and then baked in an oven, and then taken out and dusted with icing sugar and cut into squares. And
where did the raisins and the dried fruit come from?
Oh no, that's in mixed in with the sponge.
Sort of,
yeah, all that sort of,
okay.
With the spices and the raisins,
right,
and the mixture,
okay,
all
great.
That.
And when you say soaked, what would the sponge have been soaked in?
Oh, it could be soaked in tea, you know, like
okay.
Tea brack, or
right.
Could be soaked
okay.
In sort of like nearly like a treacle,
okay.
Or all of that sort of stuff. You know,
and where did the name Gurr come from then?
Well, Gurr, as I say, Gurr, there is another word, Chester cake.
Yes.
And so some of the words that you were given are correct. You know what I mean? They're just the same name for the cake.
Okay, so Gurr cake and Chester cake are the same.
Chester
right.
Cake, Gurr cake, and Donkey's Gudge. J.J. Healy, one of my colleagues down, he teaches down in Cork, and he's telling me that that's a Cork version of
right.
The same thing, you know?
Not very appetizing, Martin.
no, Donkey's Gudge. There's also Donkey Fours in Limerick, you know, which is a famous chipper, but the Donkey Gudge now is down in Cork.
Right.
But no, the Gurr cake. Gurr cake is the Dublin thing, okay? And there's a number of different explanations for this, all right? So the first one is that it comes from Gurrier. And, you know, Gurrier is a word for like a street urchin or whatever. You know, a troublesome little child or whatever. But they reckon that the Gurrier could have got its name from Curier, all right?
Nice.
And a Curier was a tanner. And a tanner is people, like, this is the tanning industry for tanning leather.
Yes.
And there's an area in the Liberties called the Black Pits.
Yes, I know it, yeah.
Okay? And the Black Pits gets its name from the fact that it was where leather used to be tanned. And there would have been quite a strong smell coming from that sort of tanning area, you know what I mean? Because they use urine to tan the hides.
Where did they get the urine from? Human urine?
Well, they used to get animal urine, but they also used to get human urine, because people who were, you know, it's interesting, because we're talking here about terms that we use every day that we don't necessarily think about the etymology about them. But with people who were poor, used to have to sell their own urine. So they would sell them to the leather tanners. Okay? But people, and those people were known as that they were piss poor, because they would have to sell their urine. But people who were even more poor than the people who were piss poor, people who didn't even own anything, they didn't even own a receptacle in which they could actually transport the urine in, they were known that they were so poor that they didn't have a pot to piss in.
Yes.
Right? So all of these terms that we use...
But where does the gur come in then? The gur...
So the gur is... that's the idea about the curier. So there is
the curier,
Gurrier would have come from curier.
Yes.
Now, also, they reckon that the gur could have also come from the idea about a gurrier, but people who were on what we call truants, suppose, or on the hop or on the mitch, or whatever. In Dublin, it was known as on the gur.
Right.
So, if you were skipping school, you were on the gur. And these gurriers, you know what I mean, who were on the gur from school, would have been very fond of this cake. And
was it cheaper than your average bun?
It would have been cheaper, and also it would have been very dense, so it would fill you as well.
It would fortify you for a long time.
It had a few things going for
so,
it.
So just the Eccles cake, fruit slice, Garibaldi, they're the Russian slice.
They're all different. You know,
they're all different, aren't they?
Yeah, the Garibaldi is more like a fruit, it's more like a biscuit with sort of dots of...
I know that one, yes, that's nice, yeah.
Someone also mentioned earlier on, they mentioned railway cake.
Yes.
And railway cake was like a soda bread that had currants in it. And again, it was known as railway cake because there was probably so few currants in it that the currant, one currant for each station when you're going on a railway journey.
What about tipsy, the tipsy cake? Somebody
tipsy
said.
Cake is different, and so was Russian. You know, I think it was a Russian cake mission. They're sort of sponge cakes. They have fruit in them, but they don't have that baked. You know, they don't have that the pastry on top or below it. You know,
right.
So again, you know, I know my colleague Anne Marie Dunn has been in with you a few times, and they would, you know, they'd give you the lowdown. But actually, I was talking to one of my colleagues, Jimmy Griffin, who teaches in Cahill Brewer Street. Actually, we'll be leaving. We're going where Cahill Brewer Street is closing down, and we're off to Grangegorman now. So it's very the everything has gone out of it now, unfortunately, you know. And well, I suppose it's an exciting new chapter. But Jimmy was telling us that there's no real recipe for gur cake, because normally you're using leftovers, and it wouldn't make sense to put a recipe in a recipe book, because first you'd have to make the sponge and then use it. But it's normally leftover stuff, you know what I mean? Okay. So it's a real leftover dish,
now,
you know?
We're running out of time. I'm going to put the call out, because I have a goo on me for gur. I have a goo on me for gur. So
Manning's Bakery up on Thomas Street. Manning's Bakery, great gur cake.
Brilliant. Dr. Martin McInumera, thanks so much. Chair of the Masters in Gastronomy and Food Studies in TU Dublin. Mind yourself and have a great weekend. That's it from us. Cormac and Sarah are on the way. We are back on Monday at 3 o'clock. Enjoy your weekend, and whatever you're doing, please do it safely. Here we go.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.